Aloha, this is Carol Cox. Please join me on Sundays here on KWAI 1080 AM from 8 to 10 AM, where we will discuss waste, fraud, and abuse in government, the environment, and some lighthearted subjects, and other issues you might have. That's Sundays, 8 AM to 10 AM, here on KWAI 1080 AM.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Another beautiful day right here in Hawaii, eh? I have a guest this morning. That guest this morning is Carolyn Galoyu and Michael Galoyu. And as you may recall, I told you we would have, there is a parade coming up. Good morning, Carolyn and Michael. Tell us about the parade and what's going on.
The regular parade route for most parades. It starts in Ala Moana and walks down Kalakaua to Kapiolani Park. And then we're going to have a celebration in the park with lots of entertainment and good food and lots of crafts and information.
Fancy house for kids. Also have things for children. face painter, and like I said, a free bouncy house, and other crafts and things that goes on. And so we will look forward for people to get there at 9 a.m. at Magic Island to help set up and get going, and the parade starts right at 10 a.m. And then at 11 a.m., for those who get there early to the park, we'll start the celebration and music and a few speeches, and off we go.
We have a lot of firsts going on this year. We've been getting notification on our Facebook page, which is the Honolulu Pride Parade. And we also have HonoluluPride.org, which you can find us on our website. Anyway, people are writing in and saying they're really excited about the parade because this is the first time they'll have been in a parade or experienced a parade. They are coming out for the first time. And so in the past, they've been part of the general population, and they're really excited. And so we're looking forward to welcoming them to the parade. And, of course, anyone else. If you've been down there before, you know it's lots of fun. But other than fun, we have to remember just this month alone, a man was shot in the face in New York City as he walked out of a gay bar. So the reason we even have a parade is to bring attention and raise awareness to civil rights issues. No one in this country, regardless of their race, color, creed, national origin, color, I've already said that, should be discriminated against or killed. And so this parade, I say it's the 23rd year here in Honolulu, but it all started back in New York City at a place called the Stonewall Inn back in 1969, June 28th of 1969. Mm-hmm. It was a little bar in what's now known as Greenwich Village, and it was owned by the Mafia. Now, isn't that interesting? I don't know if anyone's ever told you that, but one night the what was common practice was that any bar, people could be thrown out, arrested, if someone identified them as gay or lesbian, bisexual or transgendered. And so on June the 28th, 1969, there was a small uproar. It was a, I'm not going to say nonviolent, it was a violent disturbance because of the fact that they were just tired of being targeted, mm-hmm. and tired of the arrest. And see, when they arrested them, they put their names in the paper, and so if they weren't out at work, then their employers knew it, and that was grounds for them to lose their job. So it was not the world we know today, and that's why we march in June. Mm-hmm. There's many cities after New York. There was San Francisco that first commemorated the June Stonewall riots. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Los Angeles and many other cities. Now it's around the world. It's a worldwide event, sometimes in the month of June. And other countries and other states do it on different times. In fact, here in Hawaii, the Big Island is going to have their very first parade down in Hilo. Now, this is really something, and that's going to be on June the 6th.
July.
July the 6th. Sorry. July the 6th. Got the J's mixed up.
This gentleman, Jay, the new athletics director, I guess.
Right.
I personally, and I'll express it openly, I felt that there, for me, was a hint of homophobia in his action because the rainbows, you know, the rainbow and whatever, for me.
Right.
And I'm entitled to that observation and concern.
Right.
Because we've done so well with that name. June Jones took them very far and wide, and a lot of the boys got jobs and still playing.
Right.
This guy comes along, and what the rainbow itself was too feminine, so we needed to have a more aggressive man that beats his chest and eat raw meat and stir 12 eggs up and drink them in public.
Right.
You know, I was a little concerned with that, but that's just me.
No, Carol, it's not just you. But we have to go back as far as June Jones. He was the first one who wanted to add in the Warriors. And, in fact, he re-scaped the whole logo.
Mm-hmm.
And said we had to be the Warriors. And then it has been increasingly homophobic. And I don't, if UH minds, that's okay. I happen to be an alumnus. And I love the rainbows.
Mm-hmm.
And I find nothing effeminate about it. It's how you play. If you don't think your players can toe the mark, then you might have a problem with the name. But if you are self-assured of your own sexual orientation and your own identity, then, you know, get on with it. There's too many more things involved than just adding in something as, you know,
and
violent
this,
as Warriors.
And this effort, your involvement, the two of you, mm-hmm. is not just, you're not advocating for the sexual part of it and the romance part. You're actually concerned, and I hear you all the time talking when I listen to your conversations with others. It's about civil rights. It's about the dignity. No one should have to hide. And for me, I agree, because if it's a biblical belief that I have and I project on you, mm-hmm. then I've strayed across the line, in my opinion.
That's right.
Right. If
That's
it's
right.
my belief, if I pray to rocks and then you have a certain way of behaving, that's now I'm projecting on you. In my opinion, it's wrong for me to do that. So it's more than about, it's nothing to do with advocating sex. It's
no.
about
no.
looking for the rights. Can you speak to that? And give me a solid, healthy answer. Mm-hmm. Let people know that, because some of them are still in the fog thinking.
Unfortunately, you're absolutely correct. In fact, just the fact that we have asked for proclamations from the city, the state, governments for this, and this year we've had absolutely no problem. Last year we didn't have much of a problem, but in the past years we have had some of our county officials, one in particular, Jeremy Harris, couldn't write when I personally sent in an application for a proclamation. Somehow the keys on the typewriters and computers down at Honolulu Holly couldn't write out gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered. And I was just asking for the Honolulu Gay Pride Parade.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent me back a proclamation, and there was no gay in there. Anywhere in the verbiage, nowhere in the title. So I took it back and said, this is not just a pride parade. This is the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. Now we've included intersex and questioning transgendered and all that. But back in the 90s, Mr. Harris just couldn't handle that. And so once we brought it to their attention, then they finally put gay pride parade. But see, just that, the fact that I ask for something and they delete the word gay,
mm-hmm.
that's homophobic.
Mm-hmm.
That really is. And I'm speaking for myself, the president of PFLAG, and as a mother of a gay son.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't say the word gay, and if you have to look the other way and mumble under your breath, then I'm sorry, you have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
the problem with having a problem is that it doesn't stay with you. There is this whole ripple effect. So all the ones who are hung up on different verses of the Bible, they don't take them in its entirety, they have a problem. They make a problem for themselves.
Mm-hmm. And I, just to add to that, one of the differences we did see over the years is, you know, even though on ours, as we call it, more liberal side of the island, or whatever you want to call it, when we were over in Kailua for the 4th of July parade, they had no problem saying gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender when we walked by in their speeches. In fact, they were happy to have us there when they wouldn't let us in the Family Day parade at one time over here in Honolulu. So things are slowly but surely changing, but the whole thing was, you're right, it's all about civil rights and equal rights. It's not about sexuality or sex, because, hey, as they say, what happens in someone's bedroom or privacy, that's theirs, and that we're not focusing on that. We're focusing on
there's this tendency to portray or suggest that if we accept or tolerate gay people in our communities, then that's going to invite some kind of practice or overt efforts to in displaying their sexuality. But no one has a problem with a guy like Anthony Weiner, who shows his Oscar Mayer Weiner. And yet he's now going to step back into the ball game. If we were worried, honestly worried about this kind of behavior from gay community, then we should be equally worried and bothered by it. So that's where the discrimination comes. It gives us example after example of what we're the heterosexual. And I stop and say, when you take a picture of your penis, private parts, and put them on the internet, something's wrong with you, period. There's nothing to do whether you're gay or it's just, you know. You know, I don't know where to stop, but then you get many acts of this behavior, in the heterosexual community, and he goes to church, he's forgiven, but gays are banished and criticized in church all day, every day.
Right.
It's an abomination to be gay. Right. It's an abomination to take your penis and or private parts and send a picture out on the internet. Yeah,
that's right. Well, you know, one of the things that we're real proud of with the Gay Pride Parade, and that is that the churches that have been marching in the Pride Parade since the first time I ever marched in a Pride Parade, and that was 1996, and like the First Unitarian Church, they've been there. They're there every year and have been well before 1996. They probably were there in 23 years ago. But unfortunately, we don't have a lot of the records. So all I can say is they're longtime supporters. So is Church of the Crossroads, Unity Church. Mm-hmm. There are many churches. Disciples of Christ Church are going to be with us again. And so when we focus on religion, we also have to be inclusive because they have been inclusive. And one of my favorite people is Reverend Sam Cox. In fact, I put him up to be Grand Marshal this year, but he's going to be out of town. And back in the 1990s, mid-1990s, he was instrumental in getting a group called Hawaii Council of Churches together. And they did a documented statement with study, absolute research, some of our other people don't understand what facts and research are, but the group there, at that time it was called the Hawaii Council of Churches, there was 8 different churches and denominations that were spoken to, and I was really excited because they came out with a first statement in favor of and saying that there was no inherent danger or harm done by gays and lesbians getting married. And so that's really noteworthy. So all the other naysayers, they can't come up to that. And that's sort of sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I couldn't imagine how horrible of a world it would be if we allowed gay people to do this and to do that, because they may do exactly what the people that are the streets, so to speak, who's a male who fraternizes with a lot of the teachers there and smoke. I know one that smokes dope and do all of that and up chases a young girl, leaves his wife, divorces her, and then turn around and fight her and leave her in financial straps. You know,
that's it.
I guess that's what they already know how horrible a man can treat a woman, and obviously some women can do the same thing.
Right.
But I think it's just an extension of a way of being prejudiced.
Oh, definitely.
A way of hating.
Exactly.
A way of inserting our religious belief and projecting on others.
There's a call.
Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
I was calling in. My name is Sandy from O'Reilly, and I'm going to be the person riding in the limousine at the Pride Parade.
Oh, Sandy, guess what?
Yes.
Thank you for calling in. You're calling in from Maui, are you?
Yes, we are.
I am so proud of you. We haven't made the announcement yet, but I can say how we can say this is I nominated you to be a Grand Marshal in this year's parade. Sandy, I am so impressed with the work you've done in civil rights. And that's why I couldn't let another year go by without honoring you. Can you tell me how many times you've been arrested for civil rights?
Well, I think I've been on a lot of vigils and with SoulForce, and I think I was arrested 3 times. I know the first time was in Cleveland in 2000, and then New Orleans, for sure, and St. Louis. So usually it's just a fine and go, but in a couple of the places, the faith community that we were vigiling in opposition to their views wanted more time. And so in St. Louis, I spent all day in jail. And then Cleveland, the judge was late getting there, so we spent a lot of time, and they kept shifting us from place to place, and it sort of felt like during the civil rights movement when Bull Connor used to move people from jail to jail so your people couldn't find you to get you out. So that was kind of scary. But other than that, working with SoulForce, it's not a group that means to shame. It's set up for reconciliation between the gay and lesbian community and the faith communities to which they grew up in and were pushed out of when it became clear that they were, other as they would make them. So, yeah. But 3 times arrested and fined. Actually 4, Minneapolis as well. 4. So Minneapolis was the last one, and that was like in 2010 or 11.
And so, Sandy, tell us a little bit more about SoulForce, because SoulForce has not been very active here in the islands. But you have taken the island mentality to the mainland. Tell us a little bit about why SoulForce was created and who created it.
It was created by a gay couple, Reverend Dr. Mel White and his partner Gary Nixon, and it was reaction to being shut out by the faith community when he was the ghostwriter for Falwell and Ollie North and Billy Graham, and those were all like his, like they loved him until he came out as a gay man, and then he became a pariah, and he wrote Stranger at the Gate, which really sort of touched my heart, and you, of course, made him notice me, which was really scary, because the first thing we went on was the taking nonviolent summit to Falwell in we went to Lynchburg, Virginia, and that was really scary. It was 200 of us, and sat down with Falwell and 200 of his people, and it worked out very well, but and it got a lot of media attention, but there's only 2 SoulForce members here in the islands, and so it became a thing of logistics. It was easier for us to fly there than a couple of hundred people flying here and putting them where. So so we've done, you know, the faith community, when they have a convention is when we go. And it's been really interesting that you get to know who you're dealing with and they get to know you, and you get to dialogue and be seen. And it's a lot of things that are done underhanded and quietly in the back rooms in the churches could no longer be done, because they would have to answer to the media when we were standing face to face talking to them. So yeah, that became quite.
I'm interested in what you made about Jerry Falwell's assistant. You say that he was he was a ghostwriter for him, then later revealed that he was gay.
Yes. Mel did ghostwrite for Falwell and Billy Graham. He actually wrote Falwell's autobiography.
And see, that's the trouble when our opposition continues to use the talents of our gay community, but once they come out to them, then they discredit them, and that's homophobia, that's discrimination in anyone's book.
But it also speaks to the willingness on the part of some gay people to go along, to get along, and the harm that's done needs to be addressed. I mean, I know there's many explanations, but that's just one observation I'm making.
Well, one of the things you deal with in that situation is that Mel, though he knew that he was living a lie, in a sense, he went to a I think he was Baptist, but he went to a faith community therapist, in which, you know, in a sense, I think they began to pray away the gay. And then he went, you know, and he was married at this time. He married his high school sweetheart, and they knew, you know, I mean, she ended up giving him a divorce as an act of love, because he kept trying to kill himself. In a sense, he cut his wrist. He was going to attempt suicide on if you read his books. He used to bring his family to Kauai every year. And one year he sent them home early, and he learned how to snorkel, because what he was going to do was snorkel down to a cave, take off the equipment, and die. And it just so happened that a gay man was in the cottage next door, and he realized that something was very, very wrong when Mel's family went home. And so he went over and stayed and talked to him through the night, and that's the reason that Mel is still alive. So, yeah, but it was very interesting. And when we went to, excuse me, my throat, but anyway, when we went to Cleveland in 2000, we met the United Methodists of Color, and they had just made a step forward in our defense. They were asked to sign this paper condemning Soul Force and gay and lesbian people, and they wrote a letter to their hierarchy and their membership in general, saying, "We cannot, in good conscience, take this move with you, because we have not forgotten that we were the last ones you didn't want in." And they signed their names and their ethnicity mm-hmm. to the letter.
This is why I personally like to get involved and say we shouldn't be forcing other people to hide.
Exactly.
In natural ways and what have you. It's a struggle, and I keep thinking and looking back at Dinah Shore, who hid her actual heritage.
Yes.
You know, just to pass for white, just to get along in society. But while it may be good for an individual, it complements the evil people and encourage them to continue. And someone needs to say stop.
That's right.
Exactly. And that Dinah Shore was considered exotic looking. And that was the term they used for people who could possibly be black but hiding.
Well, Sandy, it's a sign of the times that organizations such as Soul Force, as you've done this morning, given us a different perspective, a perspective from Mel's point of view of why he felt it was so necessary to remain in hiding, and that's why Soul Force and PFLAG and so many other organizations across the country are working towards civil rights so that no one has to stay in hiding, that no one has to try to pass as straight, because it's we're talking about life and death situations in many instances, and our statistics on youth suicide alone, it's absolutely appalling that that our gay and lesbian children are thinking that it's better to be dead than to come out to their parents or come out to their friends.
There was a young man, a Mormon, who tried everything that he could to go along with what his church believed, even, you know, leaving his what he was doing within the gay community, and he went back to the church, and he just couldn't make it work, and so he set himself on fire on the steps of the church, and he left them a letter that said, "God, there's nothing else I can do." So, you know, I mean, when we teach our children that you are better off dead than alive because you're gay, that says that for some reason God made you this way so that he could hate you. I don't know, but that's not the God that I know.
How about the situation with police departments and federal agencies? Are they aggressively, in your opinion, pursuing acts of hate crime acts and what have you, or do they step back and drag their feet, or there's a delay because it's a gay person that was harmed?
I think it depends on the location. Federally, I think they are trying to not touch the hot potato, so they're leaving it for the states. And like here in Hawaii, we have a hate crime form. Has anybody ever told anyone they could fill it out? And we've seen crimes committed against gay and lesbian people, and it be called anything but, because they, you know, it's a hot-headed kid, and we don't want him to do big time, and oh, he made a mistake. Yes, but he ruined somebody else's life simply because he's been taught to hate that person. You know, I mean, you can't have it both ways. And most police departments don't want to deal with it. It's too much work. Because you don't have to only investigate the crime, but you have to investigate the underlying motive for the crime.
Right.
And I think this sort of correlates real well with our sports, our athletic departments, and our big sports money makers, that people are just now coming out of the closet, and surprise, surprise, they've always been there. But I can see the correlation between don't ask, don't tell is what they have been practicing, and unfortunately many of our law enforcement agencies would rather just continue don't ask, don't tell, because I have an earth-shattering announcement to make. If we have gays and lesbians in our sports teams, I believe we might possibly have gays and lesbians on our police departments.
Actually, you do. But see, in New York, I've marched with St. Xavier's Catholic Church 2 years in a row, because they march in the Pride Parade. And there's a whole contingent of gay and lesbian police officers and firefighters that march in the Pride Parade there.
San Francisco as well. I've seen them. Some of them even pushing baby carriages. So in uniform. I just loved it. The first time I saw that, I broke down in tears. I said, someday that's going to be Honolulu. It hasn't come yet, but we can challenge them, can't we, Sandy?
Well, you know, we have to make it safe for them to come out, because we can't force somebody to lose their career and the ability to feed their family.
Correct.
I never out anybody, because I don't know what their challenges are or what their fears. I can work with them on a method to come out, but I won't throw them out to the wolves. Never.
No. We don't do
thank
that.
You. Thank you for mentioning that. I had made a note here, asking the fear, just the fear factor. You might want to come out, but the reception won't be nice.
No.
And you probably end up losing your job, and probably many of the families or whatever. But families have to live a secret too. You know, so many families
know
that you're gay, but.
Well, you know, a lot of times they don't look because they don't want to know. But the other thing is that's why PFLAG was set up, is that's for the coming out process for the family and the friends. You know, that once you come out, and you never just come out. See, that's the whole process. It's like if you're passing and you say, I'm black, it's like, oh, okay. But if you're passing and you say, I'm gay or lesbian, every person you meet, you got to say, I'm gay or lesbian. You know, it's like this ongoing trauma, and you never know. I have friends who never spoke to me again.
Well, let me ask you this. Is there a parallel in your mind, in your opinion, that this is similar to blacks in the civil rights movement? I noticed that we have violence against gay people, as we did in black. We have hatred, we have prejudices and discrimination, and all of those things. Is there any similarities?
Well, first, Carol Cox, right?
Right.
Okay. First, I should let you know that I am an African American woman, so I am qualified to make that statement. And yes, there are great similarities. We are even at a point now where we are getting closer and closer to marriage equality, and the level of violence has kicked up. And you remember during the civil rights movement, the closer we got to victory, the more people were hurt or killed or maimed, because our adversaries, and I never call them enemies or anything like that, because it's not soul force speech, but our adversaries, the more frightened they become of losing their grip of power, the more violent they will become, because that's what they know. And they know if they frighten you, you have always run before. Well, if they frighten you and you stay in your ground, they're not happy. But it became politically incorrect to call somebody a nigger. It will become politically incorrect to call them a fag. So we are at that place where we are winning, and it's very hard to tell kids that. We are winning because the level of violence is so high.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the similarities of blacks, and as I asked, but one of the things is you just punched on the key word when referring to blacks as niggers. The problem was, as we got closer, you noticed the names changed. We became the change of names. Negroes, it became, and African American or blacks, and maybe maybe it's an indication that things are, if we look and compare.
Well, you know, the thing is that if I can't call you nigger anymore, what can I call you?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So, hence the change of names. But, you know, it's like my father, I grew up in a sort of a mixed household, if you wish. My father was a Southern Baptist. My mother came from a family where her father was a high Episcopalian and her mother was a Catholic that went to Mass every day.
Mm-hmm.
So my mother marrying a Baptist was tantamount to saying she was going out on the streets, you know? So it's very funny how people look at things.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in my mother was a first generation American, so I grew up with a whole different view of America and Americans, and so there were times when I hesitated to even call myself one, and then I realized that I had been given so much in my life that it was time for me to pay back. And in paying back, my first step was in taking part in the Take Back the Night marches in St. Louis,
mm-hmm.
where I was living at the time. it was a challenge against the whole thing of rape and the way the police department, the first question they asked you was, what were you wearing?
Mm-hmm. What were you wearing? Hey, we have a call. Let's see if we can entertain this call. And hold on 1 second, okay?
Okay.
Good morning, caller. You have a comment, a question?
Yes, I'd like to try to make some comments or ask some questions.
Go for it, call.
All right. Let me start off with sort of putting the shoe on the other foot.
Uh-huh.
We learned that the so-called gay boys can now be Boy Scouts.
Mm-hmm.
These boys are called gay because they show certain behavioral characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's already prejudicial to, you know. If there's a tomboy girl, can she go to be Boy Scout because she wants to learn all that stuff? You see? So my question is, really, the identifying characteristics just should be reinforcing future skills that a person will have, whether it's making flowers or greasing a bulldozer, male or female. What I really want to know is, what does it mean to be openly gay as a child? A child that I know, I mean, the man that I know when he was a child, Baptist, country boy, didn't know beer until he was 14, didn't discover about himself until he was 18, had sensibilities about something happening different that he learned against, that the church says what this feeling's not right, the school says the feeling's not right, then the military, he wasn't sure of the feeling. He turned into an activist, but what I really like to know, what does it mean to be openly gay as a kid? Come on already. And then openly gay as a soldier in a professional environment, you might allow coffee conversation about I'm married to George, if I'm a man,
mm-hmm.
but in a high-level government party, would a four-star general come in dressed in drag because that was the way he wanted to express himself because he was gay? What does it really mean to be openly gay is my question. And the tomboy girl going into the Boy Scouts kind of stirs that mud a little bit. And I'd like to hear how these people have learned through these issues and what to do about it.
Well, Curtis, I definitely want to invite you on the show because you're the kind of guy that I'm looking for. You're my kind of guy. A general wearing a pink dress and flowers would be quite all right with me as long as he don't lead me up a hill when we know we're all going to get killed. If he's going to be dancing and tapping and singing, and then we're going to be successful, whether he's gay, straight, or whatever, the object is winning. And I think you mentioned one thing, and that bothers me as an individual. You mentioned the Bible. And that Bible is the rule for everyone. It's the rule for everybody, you, me, and anybody else that want to read it. But the reality is, does it speak specifically to the evolution of human beings as we're changing today? And
no.
If you've ever lived in fear of because of who you are, you apparently haven't had that experience. I have. Driving down the road and worried about being shot because you're black. So I understand what you're saying. Go ahead, and if you have a comment for him.
I have a comment.
Hold on one, Curtis. Let her give
okay.
you.
I think that's really interesting. Does anybody remember that J. Edgar Hoover dressed in drag away from the office? Or that he was living with his second-in-command? All of that was kept quiet. Because everybody was afraid of him. He had a dossier on everybody. But you know, I mean, and most of these people, being openly gay just simply means that you are free to live your life. You are free to go and say, this is who I am. It doesn't mean that every gay man is prancing around and in drag. If a girl is butchy and wants to be butchy, I mean, that's not my thing, but, there is the Boys Club of America is now called the Boys and Girls Club of America. There is an option for the girl who doesn't want to be in the Girl Scouts. So it doesn't mean that you have to take that on, but there have been Boy Scout leaders who were gay since the beginning. There have been boys in the Boy Scouts who have been gay from the beginning. There have been, the whole thing of it is, are you going to use the Bible as a weapon? And that is called hate speak. It is called spiritual violence. You can't do that. You can't tell me to respect and love this book and then use it as a weapon to beat me to death.
No.
Go ahead, Curtis.
I'd like to say something.
Go always, Curtis. Go ahead.
You know the definition of the word gay has four meanings. The first means merry and cheerful and happy. The second means colorful and brilliant. It can apply to anybody. The third means promiscuous and licentious, I think, which becomes very interesting. And then the fourth meaning is, of course, homosexuality. And I think you could drag it out. But I don't think there's any, I don't know. I got gaydar, so to say. I know when a man is or isn't.
Hey, Curtis,
thank you, Bill.
It is so cool that you mentioned that because I was sitting here thinking when they were going to desegregate schools in Mississippi, where I live, that was this big talk about, well, no, don't bring those viral Negroes over around our young white girls. They're going to all have sex with them and impregnate them. You understand? And, oh, my God. You see?
Yeah.
So you understand, I'm living proof to tell you, you don't have to read a book and remind us all that something's wrong when we start to project on others and forget the past.
Uh-huh.
And act as if the past never existed, but we'll jump past the past, grab the Bible, and then bring it back to the future and say, this is the way it is. Yeah, your four definitions are great, but I do remember they not wanting us to go across the tracks to the white schools because they felt that we were better looking or something. There was something about that the little white girls were going to just drop their books in the middle of the street and grind, oh, my God, there's my hero. That was a big fear.
Well, so, you know, Carol? Hello?
Yeah, I think I can conclude on this.
Okay.
People at any age demonstrate repetitions and interests and skill sets, and they should be reinforced. And anything that can put a family together, whether it's two men or two women or four men and two women, whatever, a man and a woman and kids, just fine. But let's keep family values up, and let's help the young ones when they get feelings or ideas or understandings they don't understand that they got a good material to go to rather than get pounded.
Right. Okay, go ahead.
Hey, Carol, one of the things is what people are not getting is those last two definitions of gay were lately made up, but the origin of the word gay was from the French second-level theater, and it was G-A-I, and it meant there were no women on stage because only a whore would go on stage. So men played the parts of women on stage, and those were gay actors.
Yeah,
interesting.
So, you know, I research everything to death, and when I realized that I had feelings for a particular woman, I had to figure out what that meant and what that meant for my life and what that meant for the life of my child. So, but there's also that whole thing of saying, you know, what are we going to do? And it's an ongoing struggle. It seems like the 14-year-old, he came out a lot earlier than I did. I didn't come out until I was in my 30s. And that was because it never occurred to me that, as femmy as I was then, I was working as a model in New York City, that I could be a lesbian. Because the only lesbians I ever saw was what they call those foot-stomping dykes. So, boombaggers, as they used to call them in my day when I was growing up.
I'm still at a permanent loss, though. I listen. Okay. What is a gay? What is a lesbian? I think a people is a people.
Yeah.
Develop interests. They need
That's
reinforcement.
True.
Sometimes they don't have understandings about their feelings. Yeah. They got to go to trustworthy people.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible, the church, and the government try to do that. But, man, we still got a mess.
Right. You're right, Curtis. Well, anyway, you're coming down to the last 5 minutes. Thanks, Curtis, for calling in.
Aloha.
Aloha.
I have something. Sandy, can you tell us how long you have been together with your wife, Jean?
Oh, 36 years.
Well, see, that's one of the reasons that we have to cut away to the chase. We have to allow people to be people because they're already there. They're in our midst, and coming out has so many different connotations to so many different people. One of them would be putting a picture of your loved one, whether that be gay, whether that be male or female, on your bulletin board, at your desk. At your desk.
Yeah, go ahead.
That is.
Jane?
Yeah, and that's a definite act of courage to put that picture on your work desk.
Mm-hmm.
So
today, let's get to the real real issue today. This afternoon, we're having our first and only fundraiser for the Pride Parade and Celebration, and it's going to be from 2 to 7 at Bacchus Waikiki at 408 Lures. And so we welcome everyone to come down and participate and ask questions. Mike and I'll be there. We have other parents that will be there from PFLAG. We have other gays and lesbians that'll be there. Just come down and let's have a good time and enjoy the season.
What's your phone number for contact, real quick?
My contact is 779-9078.
779-9078.
Correct.
And that's PFLAG's phone. Mike, you have anything real quick?
No, I just invite you all to be down here. We look forward to it. We'll, at the celebration, we'll be reading the different proclamations from the governor, the mayor. We also have something from President Obama. And we look forward to the great celebration this coming week.
And this Saturday, next Saturday.
Next Saturday.
June what
the
time?
First,
what time?
First of June. The parade starts at 10, and the celebration starts at 11.
Where does
11:30.
It start? Where does it kick
starts,
off?
It starts at Magic Island, right across from Ala Moana, shopping
Park.
Center, Beach Park.
All right.
And we walk on down all the way to Kapi'olani, all the way. One day, we're going to have rainbow flags all the way down.
Okay. Sandy, real quick, got 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Oh, well, I'm looking forward to being there for Pride, and we have got to make it a more welcome environment for our kids. We are allowing children to commit suicide. We're allowing them to be bullied to death. So if the Bible works for you, then go with it, but use it as it's meant to be. A book of love. He asked us to love one another. And so that's all we need to do, not thank anybody.
All righty. Well, thank you, Carolyn and Mike Galoya and Sandy. And we'll see you next Saturday.
Yeah.
Okay.
All righty. See you next Saturday.
Aloha.
Thank you.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Aloha. Thank you, Sandy.
You're welcome, baby girl. Bye.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu,
K108. Those things have got too far gone. We got to let the girls know what they got to do for us. It's not gonna be a drag, man. A man can't do nothing no more. It's really a drag. You gotta do something.
Time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
Hey, good morning and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show.
just good to be here, and I always like to play a little James Brown and imagine someone doing some good aerobic dancing. And so anyway, that was just a little bit of changing paces here. And speaking of changing paces, I have Richard DeConte, one of our listeners, and he is young man. What, you're about 19?
Yeah, my name is Richard DeConte. I'm 80 going on 18. And I am 80, a former quadriplegic. It leads into everything that I'd like to talk about. Mr. Cox, close to being unique in Hawaii for us who have no voice.
Yeah.
And I asked to come on the show to discuss public transportation, the political involvement with public transportation. Just this morning, there's the fractured fleet about the van, and they mentioned CFOT, or Citizens for a Fair Americans with Disability Ride. And you must understand that they do not just represent people who, the 9,000 with disability, but Donald Sakamoto, Milton Kubo, June, Laura, Julia, Deborah, Rose are angelic. I was a guest of theirs, and they are not just for Americans for Disability. They are for all of you. And as the program progresses, perhaps you could see why. I'd like to give two short anecdotes. One is, I was at a political forum for the military budget in San Francisco. And later I'm going to deal with the hardball politic, no holds barred, etc., Ayn Rand, and Machiavellian philosophy. But this particular forum was Flagstaff Naval Officers. And at the door, after about 5 or 10 minutes, the door was opened and an orderly yelled, "Wake aboard, sir." And everybody stood and saluted until he sat down. And of course, that was a survivor of Wake Island. The other is, I had occasion to be at San Francisco State University when Van Tilburg Clark gave a lecture on creativity. He wrote The Oxbow Incident and Track of the Cat, short stories, etc. And he had a sheaf of papers, and he was up on it. He said they was asked 3 or 4 months ago to give this talk about creativity. I don't know what to say. I just threw it up in the sheets of paper up in the air, and they scattered over the floor. And then he began. And he said, I took a six-pack, got in my truck, went to Marin County under the Redwoods, and started to talk to him. And of course, everybody talked to whom? And he said, the man on my shoulder. And after about 30 or 40 minutes, he said, that's about all. And he walked away. And it was maybe 100 more people there. It was absolute silence. So then a crescendo. And of course, he was gone. Now, I hope Mr. Cox will be the man on my shoulder. I hope all of you will be on my shoulder. Because I don't just speak for myself.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, isn't it interesting? We've been talking about this show for the last couple of weeks.
Yes.
And this morning, just on the front of the newspaper, the Honolulu Advertiser, it's talking about that. And I'm going to insert a bit here about an incident that goes unaddressed, and there are many of them I'm learning. And I think the city is hiding some things. And I was asked, and now mind you, I want to tell you up front, it's not a disclaimer. So for those that are sensitive and those that like to venture out and second guess and play armchair quarterback, I would say welcome aboard, and your comments are welcome, but I'm going to share a story with you, and the family members asked me to share this story because it's one that I don't know where you start to go good or bad, but the handy vans was transporting, and I'm trying to break this because I don't want some of you out there to be so thin-skinned and sensitive, but we're going to talk about it, and we're going to talk about the handy van, and you read that article, it's about contracts and RFPs and, you know, someone suing one another. But what about the people that needs this service? So I'm going to tell you a little story about the deceased, Marilyn Robello. Miss Marilyn Robello is deceased because she, while being transported on the handy van right here near the station on September 12, 2012, the handy van turned the corner on Nu'uanu and near Kukui. And the driver hit brakes suddenly. She became dislodged, rolled down in the cage in the window where you step up into the stairwell.
Yes.
Pinned down. It's reported now. These are by the family members who convey what the mother said before she died. And that is the young man driving the truck did nothing to assist her, but ran to the back of the bus or the truck, sat down and began to cry. And did absolutely nothing. Didn't call 911, didn't call anyone. Sat there and cried. And she banged her head. And so, in doing so, she lay there and a nurse was just so happened, I'm told. And this is accounts given by the family members. And that the nurse noticed that the lady was there and the mom was asking for help. The young man, the driver, as it's described, the allegations are that he was still sitting there and hadn't done anything. The nurse entered the driver's side of the car, or the vehicle. This is the description that the mother is giving to the family. And that the nurse then, they, on the 23rd, she went to Queens. And she was on her way to Queens Physician Center on that bus. And she was let out of the hospital after that little bout. And on the 23rd, the daughter took her back to the hospital for Queens because there was some concern. She was exhibiting pain and blackouts and what have you. And they did brain scan and found that the hospital sent her home originally and discovered a fracture in her head. Now, the family gave me a copy of the death certificate, and one of the things listed in the death certificate is head injury. I don't have a copy of the actual report from the police yet. I'm promised to get that. And the situation is, I've heard many of these instances where people are being injured because they're not strapped in properly. So when I hear Mike Frumby and the other politicians getting involved, and it's like, was there something in this conversation that I'm missing? Is there any sensitivity that they need to get moving, because their federal laws are ADA compliant, the city's supposed to be, but can they circumvent or skirt the legal requirements by engaging in tug of war and contracts and who's going to get the proposal? So I'll tell you more about this. The mother in November, she 22nd, she went downhill, when she passed, Queens, I have a copy of the bill here, where the Queens, just for as an example, wanted $185,000 for the care, and she's on Medicare, and I'll get more into this, but I'm just puzzled as when I read that article, and I thought, I didn't see one mention of if we have a shortage of vehicles that are functioning and serviceable or operable, I didn't see anything talk about the dangers that it's presented with this fleet that went in that article.
Exactly my sentiments after reading Fractured Fleet in this morning, being so close for over 10 years using the handy van, bus, etc. I would give you an anecdote of my own. Hollow Drive, driver's 35 minutes late, goes up Hollow Drive to get some very old lady, but she wasn't there. And an older man comes down, and he doesn't know where she is either. And the driver is confused. Here comes a truck in the opposite direction with the lady in the private vehicle. Now, if that driver hadn't been such a good Samaritan, something could have happened. Now, Mr. John Black is in charge of the van. And this is just my opinion. He is in the middle. He is not the power. He does not have the authority. I find people like Roger Morton, the former Wayne Yoshioka, guilty. All three mayors, guilty. Now, let me go back and more conceptually. Before MUFI, 5307 was an urbanized area formula grant by the feds. And they gave money to the bus and the van, 50-50. With MUFI and his ambition, now he introduced the rail, steel wheel on steel track, hard rail. Now, this plan has been faulty from the beginning. The cost has been lowballed, it's been doubled, there have been many, many political maneuvers. And, for example, at the start, you had it going through Salt Lake, and that was Romy Cacciola's district. But after the vote, it went to the airport, and Romy Cacciola, at his own admission, went to Rufi and said, you told me it was going to go through Salt Lake, and now it's going to the airport. And Rufi said to him, sorry, Mufi, the ball's in your court now. Now, steel wheel on steel track is because that's what Mufi wanted. He wanted money to go for higher office. He needed the money, he went to the corporations. The corporations wanted a large project, the unions wanted a large project, and this is how it all got started. And a panel was picked to pick a source, alternative sources. This expert panel named Tober, Knight, Barsoni, Colasar, and R. Prividoris. Who picked the panel? Where did they meet? These are all rhetorical questions. Which staff helped them? Who gave them information, slides, PowerPoint printed documents? September 16th, 08 to September 22nd, little discussion, no minutes, no transparency. Steel wheel on steel rail, hard rail, not. Now we have Norman Minella come here. And Norman Minella, as I'm looking at right now, says, Honolulu needed it back in 92 and still needs it. Light rail has proven over and over again it works well in all cities. Now, just this past week, you have a new transportation secretary named Fox. And on his nomination, he was the mayor of Charlotte, light rail. And the person from Minnesota comes on, a Congress lady, Klobuchar, I believe her name is, and she talks about light rail. Now, in the beginning, semantically, we were told it was going to be light rail. It is now elevated. Heavy steel wheel on steel rail. Now, how does this get done? It's done by the demagogues. They say they're for the common man and not the elite. They say they are for conceptual, intellectual. No, they appeal to emotion, to persuade. They coerce. They have vested interest in their own priorities, ambitions, and goals. Take, at this point, Nestor Garcia. He is the one that went back to Washington, D.C. with Mufti. He is the one that, as a subcommittee and as chairman in the city council, helped to end any alternatives. And they break rules. Example, Garcia has been fined $1,600, fined guilty of conflict of interest, but never was sanctioned. Now, in a quality process, just what Mr. Cox was saying, quality rider service is first. If you run a quality management company, you meet expectations of your riders. And you do it right the first time. How many changes have been made? Hundreds of changes. What does that mean? Your taxpayer money. Because every time you have a change, it's going to cost you. And the critics are your best source, because they will tell you what you do not want to hear in your cocoon. Now, very quickly, I'm looking at a matrix. And if you can imagine on an 8.5 by 11 sheet, across the top are the bidders, the vendors. Felius, hot lathes, magnetic levitation, monorail, steel wheel on steel track, rubber on concrete. That's across the top from left to right. Now, if you look down the left-hand side, rider service, quality. Safety, schedule, speed, noise, access, comfort, ADA, and aesthetics. I'm not going to read the rest except for the caption. Route, technology, energy, cost, capacity, interoperability, EIS, and eminent domain. So if you had this sheet and all the conceptual figures were on here, you could compare and contrast these different systems. You could compare steel wheel on steel track with all the others. Where is that? It was never presented to the people of Hawaii. The problem involves the process, but not the people. There is an iron triangle. In the bottom of a triangle is left, the bureaucrats. On the right, special interests. And up at the top, the politicians. Who had the power to choose steel wheel? When, where, how, why? How will it affect the public? Upon what philosophy? Well, it was a philosophy of duality. Good, bad, verbal solution, fixed principles. As opposed to a quality ride validated by real consequences, empirical, verifiable. Open for scholarly analysis, examination, critique, experimentation, etc. Instead, it was blind faith, conformity, closed ideas, corporate mentality. Now, the way they did this, and all the people that supported this rail, they demonize anti-rail activists. You are just against job creation. That's why you are against our rail. They oversimplify by dichotomies. It's steel wheel on steel rail or nothing. Mufti, I'll pull the plug. And that has gone on the signs that have been taken down, the windows that have been shot through, etc. They create specious claims of certainty. Steel wheel on steel track will go through Salt Lake to UH Manoa, and that is not what happened by design. They denigrate critical thinking. Heart is more effective than the city council. Wait a minute. What did the city council have? They had power of attorney. They had the budget. They had eminent domain. And what happened? Heart was given eclipsed the city council, and now taxpayer money is given to, they can hire their own lawyers, Hart can have their own people, they don't need civil service, and the worst is heart has eminent domain. You did not elect the people on heart. There are no engineers on heart. Gerbaskis is a public relation person. Now, if Mr. Cox will let me, I will give you an example how you could be a tax-paying plutocrat. That's the money, power, ability to do what you want. And you're going to invest $5 billion in public transportation. Did you know and avoid complex risks? Did you deny potential errors? Did you set milestones for success? Did you invest too much just to make it right? Did you believe in the supposed experts who told you you were going to profit off your investment, whether it be money or service? Did you ask opinions from people who thought you were wrong? Did you go to the academe? Did you go to the universities? Did you go to the people who ride the bus, who ride the vans? Did you go to the drivers of the buses and the vans? Did you research other organizations? Insalto is the one that's picked, and they've got so many problems. Did you ever gather all the stakeholders in one place at one time to discuss the mode of transportation? Did you go to Providoris at the university? Did you go to the politicians like Dijoux who opposed it? Did you go to the public? Have you listed the causes for your failures? What should you have done to correct your mistakes? And when they tell you it's a done deal, it's not a done deal. And I will give you on April 20th, 2012, in terms of the bus, Wayne Yoshioka, title, Change is Afoot, the bus routes, not a done deal. And this is what the one paragraph. It doesn't deprive anyone of service. Director of Transportation Wayne said, we won't screw people from getting to work or wherever they're going. Out there, there are so many who know what an outrageous lie that is. Mm-hmm. And so I'll stop here.
But I'll continue. I want the full story.
Well, I can definitely go back.
Yeah, we'll pick it up. And again, like you're saying,
yes.
The people. And then they changed the buses. What was it? 6 months ago, you folks were on here with me,
yes,
talking about the changing of the schedules. And I understand there's still a couple of routes that have not come back into service.
Yes. I mean, just this week, with the new director of Formby said the route, I think it's Route E, the route along the corridor. Now, I can't prove this. I'm not sure who can prove it, but why did they change the bus? Because of the rail. Where's the rail going to go along the corridor? But what are the buses going to do? They're going to feed the rail. Wait a minute. The rail's not coming for 3 or 4 years. You changed the bus schedule. Do you think there's inconvenience? That's a kind, semantic word. But no, many bus schedules. Number 14 was supposed to be changed. It might have been improved, but it isn't back to the way it was. Now you ask, well, are they going to change it? Caldwell said, yes, we're going to change it. That's why I want to be elected, to change. But now he's changing his opinion because now he doesn't have the money. He wants to put a 5% increase on fuel. And let me explain, because I was there, and I can bill 3112, 3212, and 3312. Now, these are HART and the officials for rail, politicians. They're in front of the City Council, Budget Committee, Ann Kobayashi, Chairman, and Gabbard, Vice Chair. 31 is for the operation and maintenance of the rail brought to them by HART. After about an hour, Ann Kobayashi says, I'm sorry, but you haven't justified the use of taxpayer money. I'm responsible for the taxpayers, and you have not. I can't accept the money for operation and maintenance of the rail, of HART. And maybe my vice chair can. Gabbard does. The next, 3212, is the capital budget. And Kobayashi says the same thing. I can't justify this. Maybe my vice chair can, and she does. And number 33 is a loan to HART, and the same thing happens. So what you have is collusion. There is a revolving door. We live in a republic. We have representatives. But Romy Tricciola and Dela Cruz go to the state from the council, and then from the state, Pine, Monahan, and Menor come to the city council. So once upon a time, when Barbara Marshall was chair, you had a 5-4 vote with DJU, APO, etc. Now it's 8-1. And it's all for rail. Of what consequence? You are paying for it. And if you don't think it affects you, it does. Let me give you an example of the pillars. Now you've got the HART board in front of the council again. And once again, the controversy over putting up the pillars. And then Kobayashi and Cacciola say, you've got three lawsuits. These lawsuits might stop the construction. Why are you putting up pillars now? You've got one, two, or three, whatever. And if I want to buy a house for $8 million and I only make $80,000, how can I buy an $8 million house? You don't have the money. You have contracts. You have no money. And Bonner, sitting down at the end of the table, I was there, says, do you want to send the boys back to the bench? And it's this way with everything. It's the HART Council. Why do they create HART? Because they want to eclipse the council. They want the power, the money, the ability to hire. They don't want interference from the council. And thank goodness for Ann Kobayashi, and I'll say for Mr. John Black, because they have tried to help all of us who have no voice. Now, talk about the bus. Roger Morton, I gave him a letter, handed to him, my address stamped. And I asked him, has any money been taken from the bus or the van to be used for the rail? I never got that letter back. 3 months later, this is about 9 months ago, 3 months later, he was sitting in the back, and I turned around from my testimonial seat, and I said, Mr. Morton, has any money been taken from the bus and the van to be used for the rail? Silence, except for Wayne Yoshioka, who said no. That's a lie. Money has been taken from the bus and the van. Now that brings us to today's newspaper, because that's exactly the problem. There is no money, because they're taking the money to be used for the rail. Mm-hmm. And it's all holistic. It's all organic. It's all related. So... And once again, Citizens for a Fair Ride, they're for everybody in the island. They are angelic, and they work so hard, but their voice is not heard. If it is heard, for example, Breen Orimoto gives them 1 day a month to go to the second floor of the city council. Name one proposal for the van from Breen Orimoto. He knows the problem exists. When they cry ignorance, that is not an excuse. How can I, a simple, ordinary citizen with no computer, how can I know all of this? Wait a minute. I question your authority. I question what you're saying. Good. Skepticism. You must be skeptical of me. You must find out for yourself. And when you do that, perhaps you can verify what I've been trying to say to you.
Well, I there's so much, and I couldn't quantify it, but there is a lot of hanky-panky corruption.
Yes.
The thing is, I think the face of corruption is Kurt Caldwell.
Yes.
Honestly, because he's the way this thing plays out, they are absolutely, when I go back to the lady, Ms. Rebello, who has died from that accident, it's, in this, the family gave me a while back this document on, just going to read to you, the insurance. They only cover $10,000 for the insurance of the person. So then, here, dear Ms. Rubello, we have received notice of the above referenced accident. The information provided indicates that you were injured in this accident. We sincerely wish you a speedy recovery. We are prepared to review your claim. But anyway, they go ahead and give a sign. The PIP, personal injury benefits, provide an aggregate limit of $10,000 for appropriate and reasonable treatment and expenses. Now, here's a lady that was thrown from her wheelchair down into the stairwell of the van, the handy van, lay there because the, as they say, the story goes, is that the driver panics and starts to cry. But there are some names here I didn't see in that article, but that I know. There's a company called Innovative Paradigms, and that is, they are responsible for the eligibility center. They go out and qualify people to work the eligibility. But if the city knows they only have a limited number of vans, why are we paying such large amount of money to Paradigm, by the way, who is a division of Paratransit in Sacramento, California? So the question is, the way this thing is laid out, there's so many hands in the handy van.
Yes.
And somebody is greasing the palms of these people. You cannot have this much fragmentation. Söderholm is suing and challenging the what have you, and it was thrown out in court, as the paper mentioned it. But here's the problem. There are people, their lives are being impacted.
Yes.
They made promises when I first started to inquire about it a year and a half ago, and they said, well, we're going to put more in the fleet. Well, that's what we need. Now, we don't have enough money. But if you can hire a guy like Frumby, take that money and put by the parts. We don't need him. He was there at the Department of Transportation where Lingle appointed him. And if you folk remember, that was under his guidance and what have you. There was an old ghost ship, steel hull ship, that floated around in the dry docks. If you look it up, it was KHON did a story with me on it. It just sat there, sucking up monies, and Frumby was involved in that as an administrator. Not cooperative, and so how he, I think he's idyllic. It's perfect marriage between he and what I know about him, and his tactics and his strategies and his origin suggests that he's the kind of guy that'll do anything for the team, but little for the people. And that's what I've seen, and I'm amazed at how Caldwell, but then I guess, likes attract one another. And this is not opposite attract. These guys think, if you're willing to sit and let this thing unfold with the handy van,
yes,
then something's wrong with your ethics, because there are people that need it. And when people are thrown from their wheelchair, and you got drivers, as the allegations are, if it's true, that run to the back of the bus and cry and don't even have the presence of mind, then that tells you that the handy van operation and its whole management is rotten to the core.
Yes.
And people are not put first.
It is the Stockholm Syndrome. The propaganda and Machiavelli use force, coercion, win at any cost, mm-hmm. and... propaganda. Mm-hmm. And that is exactly what the rail is involved with, is propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
And it's to make a budget is ethical and it's a moral decision.
Mm-hmm.
They are concerned about the bottom line and only the bottom line. There is self-interest. Yeah. And
yeah, the one thing here, this company, they have Sedgwick, that as an insurance company, and the people are having a difficult time. The family is having a difficult time in placing ownership. Who actually owns it? It's so fragmented. You know, and this family has obtained a lawyer, and I hope they prevail, because if they prevail in fleshing out this whole process and the doings of the bus company, the transit, Oahu Transit,
yes,
Paradigm, Innovative Paradigm, Paratransit, and all of those people, they may not be the ones who repair, do the mechanics, but they are the ones who pick these people, I guess, the drivers. I don't know, or they have something to do. You would think they would put the passengers first or be advocating.
That is exactly the problem. From the beginning, they did not put rider service first. There are ulterior motives, and mm-hmm. I mentioned them before. There is collusion. I once mentioned conspiratorial, and I said, what do you think, there's a, we didn't go to the moon, whatever. No, that's not the point. It's not the Illuminati. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking of pragmatic. I'm talking about, I'm a fabulistic pragmatic, which means I make mistakes. Others make mistakes. Do the best you can. Correct the mistakes. Secondly, how does it affect me? I mean, anybody. You who are on the street, how does this actually affect your life? So being pragmatic.
Mm-hmm.
And these people resort to illusion. We live in illusion.
Mm-hmm.
The rail is going to help people move. No, it's not. There's going to be some people who will. But if you're going to have to get in your car to a parking lot, get into the train, go to get off the train, get in your car and go to the annex or cab and go to your business or school and then do the same thing every day, did they take this into account? When they say 42 minutes with 21 stops, the doors open and close on the train, are you going to go from Kapolei to Ala Moana in 42 minutes? It goes on and on and on. And
now let me submit this.
Sure.
We know that the governor, the current governor,
yes,
was actively involved in advocating for this rail.
Yes.
Do we vote for him next year or the next turnaround?
Asking me, it's almost, I'm not a single issue person.
No, I'm not, but he made many
but
screw
I,
ups.
No, I, you're not, I'm not an advocate for Abercrombie, but... but as you see, we do have a republic, but it's a revolving door in Hawaii. You're having the same people put in, and the reason they're put in is because InfraConsult, Breakerhoff, Kiwi, they're all paying for these politicians.
Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Morning, Carol. Great topic. Richard, I commend you for coming on the show, telling everybody about the truth. This is Don. I just want to say something about Colleen Hanabusa, since you're talking about politicians. On May 9th on a radio show, another radio show, I don't want to name the name of the show, but I asked her point blank. She was on a show. I'm with Citizens for a Fair ADA Ride. We deal with public transportation for bus and a handy van. As a congresswoman in Congress dealing with federal money that goes to the city for transportation, will you make sure that the funds for the 5307 is not diverted to the rail for contingency basis, because we need the money for, especially for the handy van, because we've been waiting so long for a new van, replacement van. She immediately said on the radio station, I know Oahu Transit, I know the people there, and this and that. I think they should get the money. I believe they should get the money for the funding should all go to the bus and paratransit. She corrected me, paratransit. services, because those people who really need it need those funds for the services, and it shouldn't be diverted, you know, to anything. So the person that was on the radio station, the moderator said, "I'm going to hold you to that comment, Colleen." Mm-hmm. And when she was talking, she was kind of nervous when she talked, because before that they were talking about Libya, you know, the embassy and everything else with mm-hmm. Obama. Mm-hmm. And my topic was local and concerned with federal funds going to the bus and handy van. And she made that remark, and I hope she doesn't retract it and she stays focused on to that, because when I went to the town hall meeting this past Monday for the mayor in Kaneohe, the senior center, question was brought up, has any funds been diverted from the bus services to rail? The mayor took immediate action on that and said the bus money has not been diverted to the rail at all. We get the money through the general excise tax and the $1.5 billion from the federal government. No money has been transferred from the bus to the rail. You got to refresh that question. How much money has been diverted to the rail and contingency? And if he says no, then he's really wrong, because that's really, they took so many millions of dollars. And it's in the holding fund right now for contingency.
Now, Donald, while I got you, is the ADA community being impacted by this shoddy management or these issues that face the handy van?
Yes, I believe that is true. You know what, Richard, and what we try to say is it's horrendous. You know, Carol, our group is not a 501(c).
Right.
We're just a bunch of people came together. My vice chair was chair of this committee, Louise Horio, the late Louise Horio. She tried her best to work with Mr. Yoshioka and the administration before that, Mufi and Kirk Codwell when he was acting budget director and whatnot. Let me ask you this.
Why don't you folks, the ADA community, because it's a law that requires to have certain rides, availability, all of that. Am I correct?
Yes.
So we now know that it has happened for at least 2 years that I know of, 3 years. Why not go seek a legal counsel and file a lawsuit or file a legal action, class action? I don't give legal advice, but I sure would encourage you to go seek out. And because talk now is enough. I mean, I'm looking at Miss Robella, who died as a result. And I, you know, a result of this incident or this accident.
Yeah.
And if they're not delivering as a requirement by law, the court's ruling, then you should just bring things to a close and just file a lawsuit, a legal action. Maybe that will prompt them to stop blaming it on Soderholm and RFPs and all of that. Because ultimately, who is being impacted? I feel like I'm singing karaoke.
Uh-huh.
When I sit and talk this subject any longer, because it's like the same old song, and just wait and hit my note and be done with it. Why don't there be some action that you folks contemplate or consider?
Yeah, the FTA does have a form I believe you can fill out and submit. You have to be very thorough in your information. You have to make sure you have all your facts and everything, so that they can.
Well, that's preaching to the choir. Whatever is needed to get it done. An attorney. I mean, there is a smart enough attorney out there,
uh-huh.
or a legal aide, or someone. I mean, because I read this article this morning, and I was preparing with this story on the Rebellos, and it's enough to make you mad.
Uh-huh.
But where is the excitement and the anger? There needs to be. Or go to Breen Haramoto and ask him.
Do you have the article on your website?
No. It's in today's paper.
I didn't read that article yet.
Yeah, it's the front page. Anyway, Richard has a question.
Yes, thank you, Donald. You're saintly, you and Milton and the rest. I miss you very, very much. And once again, you are helping everybody, not just Americans for Disability. As I have been just with you for a year and a half, shortly, and follow this for 5 years, there has to be militancy. There has to be more aggressive action against what they're doing. They rely on Aloha, Machiavelli, and objectivism. They rely on that so that they can win the argument. You've got to fight them, and I choose my words carefully, but unless you do that, nothing is going to change. You meet with Breen Horimoto. How many proposals has he brought? He is transportation chair on the council. What has the mayor done? He said that he is going to water, sewer, rail, potholes. And now what does he do? He wants more money.
Right.
But he never said that before.
Uh-huh.
I believe it's about money. Who's got the thing about the golden rule? He's got the money rules.
Well, we have the money, so we
yes,
do.
Yes, taxpayers.
Yeah.
Yes, we do, we do, we do.
But again, it's. I was hoping the mayor would show some sensitivity in his speech. Talk about the ADA people.
Let me give you an example about the aesthetics in terms of what's going up. He said that you could hide the elevated guideway behind buildings.
Yeah. Donald, real quick, we got like about four more minutes. What's, you got any comment?
Yeah. I just want to say that our meeting was this quarterly meeting was on Tuesday the 21st.
Mm-hmm.
And I had Dan Gabauskas there, and I told him about the situation with the information in 2010. We ran it, the city had a forum when acting mayor Kirk Conwell was there at the Blaisdell, where we had people come and broke up in groups, and the issue was about rail cars being stuck. And where's the backup generators? And they said, oh, they're going to have backup generators. And then when I went to the April 11 HART board, Oahu Transit board meeting at 6:11 on April 11, he tells the HART board, Dan Gabauskas, that he needs funding for the generators because they weren't put in the original budget.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it wasn't his fault. It was whoever was there before him.
Yeah.
But what the heck? And then, and I told Dan Gabauskas that the safety of the people is very important because somebody in that rail car is stuck in there and locked. Somebody has a knife, a gun, or a bomb. I mentioned the bombing thing in Boston. Who's going to protect them? Who's going to save them? Because that car is going from one station to the other station. By the time they get to the station, they're dead. Or we'll have cameras all over the place.
Well, my recommendation is that, and I've said it again, it annoys some people, how much longer will you talk with them? You need to at least show them you have incisors or some fangs or something that you, or just take a bone and crack it while you're in the meeting and let them know something. Because I watched this story this morning and I felt pain because there is a federal law, there is a human aspect of it that people need to get to their dialysis, people need to get to their doctors, people need to get, and then when they're rolling over and hitting their heads and subsequently dying from it, I don't think another meeting would benefit you anything, because if they're not fixing the buses, the vans, and if they're driving around with drivers that will run to the back of the bus and start crying when one of the passengers roll down the stairwell because the wheelchair comes on dislodged. I'm just not saying you should get down there and start cursing them. But I think you might want to beg the mercy of some lawyer out there to at least join forces and write a letter, a formal letter, or notice of letter to intent to sue or something, because they're just dog, and you know, it's just bad. So anyway.
Yeah. Well, Carol, I'll talk to Mr. Cool, my vice chair, about this and my other members.
Yeah.
And we're going to try to get this thing resolved with this incident. But I am going to talk to them and see what we can do in legal matters.
Yeah, you need to give these guys something that you'll mind being talkative, but you will also take some action after a while. Because if for a person that's on dialysis, it makes a matter between life and death.
Right. If your treatment gets short, you don't get the full treatment, it doesn't help you with your dialysis.
Yeah, and other things.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
Thanks.
Okay, all righty. Thank you. And we'll talk again.
Mahalo.
All righty. Talking about politics and
Honolulu, I had brought this undocumented in real quick, an email. sent out by Richard Raposa, Hanabusa for Hawaii and Alta. Aloha, Carol. Before Colleen, all of you got this probably, before Colleen formally announced her decision to run for the U.S. Senate, our campaign commissioned a poll to get a better sense of where we stand at the start of the race. More than 500 surveys were conducted in February on Oahu, Hawaii Island, Maui, Kauai, and the early results confirmed that the majority, and listen up, of the voters recognize that Colleen is the experienced, bipartisan legislator and leader that Hawaii needs now in the U.S. Senate. What garbage. Do I care if 500 people decide Colleen is the experienced bipartisan? So what? That just means she's going to do just exactly what she's been doing, get a free house or a big discount from Jeff Stone, with like everybody else, more property, and give her buddies a $75,000 tax break and all of that, and promise to close a landfill. Folks, that's what you want to keep in mind. None of this 500 people from the corners of the earth that thinks now that she's the experience. That tells me absolutely nothing. And then, but again, to be fair, show you politics and what people will say, and load your emails up with garbage. And this is garbage. This is sent out by Linda Paul, who's an environmentalist activist attorney. She's close to Brian Schatz over the years we've worked together. And we've worked together on the shark fins. And Brian has a love for the environment. The tsunami debris conference has been moved to the fall. Attaches a revised announcement. The Department of Land and Natural Resources is now a co-sponsor and asks us to move the conference forward on October 14th and 17th, which works better with their schedule and is also the fall congressional recess. Listen up. Senator Schatz is very supportive of the conference and will be working with NOAA and EPA for help on these to participate. Now, you know, if you're going to tell me about tsunami debris in Japan and coming here, just tell me about that. Don't tell me that Brian Schatz, slide that little political tickler. This is why we end up with the same people, because the environmentalists, who's supposed to be simply worried about the environment, they like to bring in that politics. Ladies and gentlemen, that's why we find ourselves behind the eight ball every morning we wake up. That's why the Mufi Hannemans, the Kurt Caldwells can slip it to you, because we fall for the bait and we don't realize what's really going on. Richard, thank you for joining.
Don, very quickly, I was in the handy van, and he knew I was going to the council, and I didn't solicit this from him. We were talking about politics, and he said, well, that's why I'm not going to vote. That's why I don't pay taxes. I don't want to, if I do, that's why I'm here. Stop all this. Try.
Thank you for tuning in to the Carol Cox Show. Heard every Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on K108. Tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show, right here at KWAI Honolulu.